Welcome to the Rugby Bits podcast, brought to you by bet.co.za. Thank you for listening wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and drop a 5-star rating to share this podcast with the rugby world. And please also visit the bet.co.za website for some awesome deals and markets for the United Rugby Championship and the Champions Cup as well. My name is Tala, and today I'm joined by a full squad. I've got Jared, I've got Cooks, I've got Sean with us today. And we're joined by a special guest today. Still nursing a hangover from his weekend in Dublin. We've got Tom Savage, who is the @3RedKings account, one of the most partisan Munster accounts you'll find on the website. And he's one of the main members of the Provincial State of Mind podcast, which does a deep dive into the Irish franchises every week. So Tom, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me on. Great to be here.
Tom, go on, Jared.
Yeah, Tom, great to have you. And I think it's quite fitting that we get you right after the madness this weekend. Besides the hangover, how did you find the game? Obviously, we're talking about Munster versus Toulouse. Do you think Munster can feel a bit hard done by in what was ultimately an incredibly close game? 100 minutes and you couldn't even be split.
It's a tough one to take. You know, you look at the game itself, just really high quality match. You know, Toulouse were just colossal. You know, you get a real feel for how big they were in the stadium. I thought Munster really struggled in the scrum as well, to the stage where, like, for Munster still to be in the game at all, given how strong Toulouse's scrum was, I think it's a credit to how Munster kind of played and kind of worked around that, so to speak. You know, I can't really complain too much about Toulouse winning ultimately. I think both sides had a lot of chances to win it. You know, Munster left a few of those opportunities behind. But I just think the actual game itself, like, you can hear my voice here, it's messed up still from the game. It was just a really fantastic occasion. And, you know, you don't want to be going on too much about, you know, being a gallant loser. You know, I don't think anybody is into that, really.
Not
but
for sure.
There was a lot there for fans to come away thinking, you know, there's something there. There's something building with that team. But to lose a very, very tough side to stop with the quality they have, it was just a very, very exciting game to watch live. I was just glad to be there.
Oh, excellent. So our first phase topic this week sort of touches on the game itself to start off with. So I think we'll start with Tala and we'll get his answer for this one. But if you still stuck all square after 100 minutes, how should we decide these knockout matches? Should we be carrying on with the kicking competition or what other option do you have, Tala?
Yeah, I was just, and I think everyone on Twitter was talking about, was it, I think 2004 with the Cardiff and Leicester game and Martin Williams missing that kick. So, I mean, apart from obviously Munster losing and that obviously being heartbreaking for Tom, I kind of miss the comedic effect of having all of the players kick. So I wouldn't mind if it was maybe 8 of your kickers or 10 of your kickers, maybe not the whole team. And just having that contest there.
So you would go back to the old formats of just straight in front and everyone gets a shot.
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe I'm a bit of a cruel person and a sucker for punishment, but I really do like seeing a forward just shank a kick from in front because that's exactly what I would do as well.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you, I think... Peter Omani would probably will it over, especially the way he was playing this weekend.
he wouldn't will it over. The ball would be too shit scared not to go over. Like, that's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
He won't even kick it. He'll just look at it and use his Jedi forces and the ball fly over the center pole. The center dot.
If the ball even thought about going wide, it would just kind of just curl slightly back in. Just like, okay, let's take it easy. I was going to say, I think just go back to just having props kicking. Like, forget about your kickers. Get it on the 22. Like, nobody can tell me, right, that you wouldn't look and like Joe Tacori stepping up over a ball and trying to kick it. Nobody could tell me that is not more entertaining than watching guys who kick every day. Like, come on, no, I want to see Joe Tacori. I want to see Stephen Archer taking goal, kicks at goal. That's how it should be settled, like men.
I think Munster might have an upper hand there, especially if you're talking back rows and second rows with Tag Byrne there, because he's got a hell of a boot on him as well. But yeah, Cooks.
He could probably drop it over the bar. He'd be stepping back for drop goals. This guy.
No, I'm not surprised. Cooks, just so that you can bring the fly halves back into it. Would you be wanting Finn Russell to be taking the kicks, or are you calling on? How would you decide it?
I think I'd ask Finn Russell to kick it with his heel or do something fancy like he'd do in the weekend. But I think if it's still tied after 100 minutes, I think you pick three of your best ball carriers and the other side picks three of their best defenders, and they're just like one and one. If you bound someone, then you sort of, it's a point for you. If the guy scores, you could like sort of make it like mano a mano and just, let's say, run a straight challenge. If each team picks a person, so if you happen to pick your wing, it says number one in that team picks, so the eighth man, good luck to the wing, and sort of, yeah, just make it a fight.
Quade Cooper and Chesson Colby will be elevated up to being the most sought after talented rugby players in the world then.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we should maybe just have a look at getting all of the outside backs scrummaging. Just have a scrummaging contest between the backs. Whoever goes backwards beyond 5 meters, that's who wins the game.
I think some of the Sevens players would have a great upper hand over there. Like, I'd back the Sharks with Vanna Cork in there.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember Johnny May being at the side of a scrum and just, I don't know if he's going backwards or sideways?
he just didn't know what he was doing. It was great. It was like watching a young fellow going in there for his first time. Like, you'd swear he would have seen a flanker scrummaging before. Like, it was just the weirdest thing. It's like, what's he doing when they're scrummaging?
It's like when backs go into the mall. Like, I thought the rule was if I'm the guy at the back, the ball must be passed back. But when backs join the mall, they just join from the side over the guys that see, and the ref's like, you know what, you backs play on. There's no entry rules for backline players when they join the mall.
I think this is a brilliant chat, but if I have to throw my two cents in, I think the kick competition is great, and it doesn't actually happen too often. The one change that I would make is that you're only allowed to kick once until, if it's still tied, then you come back around. I think the format that they used this time was quite great, that you're having the side kicks in front. But yeah, I do feel for somebody like Ben Healy that is the side's go-to goal kicker and unfortunately shanked one. And yeah, that's eventually sorts the game out. But a golden point, in my opinion, can be just as harsh in a way. One silly penalty right from a kickoff could end the game immediately.
I was going to ask the golden point. Would you prefer to receive the kickoff, or would you guys prefer almost kicking off the position?
I think kicking off to the opposition, you automatically in that half. So I think that makes a major difference. Even if you've got someone like Francois staying clear, if they clear, you're going to get in the ball back immediately. So I'd rather kick off. Tom, what's your thoughts?
I would just like to get I would like to get possession in that scenario. I think you can always kind of work with that, build a sequence from there, rather than looking to try and kick off and get the ball back. Although, do you know what, it's tough, because there's lots of teams have different philosophies when it comes to closing out a game. Some guys want to do it with possession, some guys are happier without possession. I think you see the Springboks more often than not trying to play without possession in those circumstances, but it's tough. It's just, again, I would agree with you more or less. I would say like a golden point where you maybe keep playing in 5 minute increments until you get a score somewhere. You know, it might be a kind of a, not fairer, because there is an element of a lottery about a goal kicking competition. But I think it'd be something that might be a bit more, I suppose, kind of reflective of the game itself rather than goal kicking.
And I'm, would prefer not to have a kickoff, but I'm all for removing players during that extra time. Like maybe have like it done with the referee does a draw. So then they'll like say, awesome, okay, so after the first 5 minutes, the number four locks are off and then the scrum halves are off and then your fullback. And then there's like just random positions are pulled off the park and then they play with less and less people.
What I love about that idea is that you can't take the front rowers off. So at the end of it, because you need to have a scrum at some stage, at the end of it, you're just going to have
the top five.
Just four props going at it and two hookers going at it. Like that sounds fantastic on a full length pitch to see who scores.
I think they need to remove the scrum half and the fly half first.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine sort of a team like the Stormers who have like multiple like first receivers in that team. That would be like a big advantage for them. But yeah, I think that was one of the ideas put out. And I think it's from ice hockey when they have their like power plays, they remove players off the rink and then they, you know, obviously it encourages more attacking play. So I think Tudor, Caradoc Davis was talking about that. Rihanna also mentioned a goal line to goal line race by the wingers, which would be super exciting as well.
Yeah, the thing about hockey, one awesome thing that you obviously can do is if you're trailing in a game, you pull a keeper. So your keeper goes off and then you've got another skater on the ice. So you've essentially got a one man up. But it'd be difficult to try and put that through put that through into rugby. Or maybe like when there are no scrums, you can substitute your front row for outside backs and then they swap out. But that's very NFL though.
Yeah, but I do love these maximum chaos type of options here. Tom, just just a quick question about sort of the logistics of this match. As we now all know, thanks to the commentators as well, that the match got moved because of an Ed Sheeran concert. But it did seem like it was a sea of red in Dublin on Saturday. What was there like an arrangement made for like buses to bus in fans? You know, obviously majority South Africans that listen to this podcast, just give us a bit of an idea of how Munster tried to make sure that the stadium atmosphere was, as red and as Munster as possible.
Yeah, it was tough because when they were booking this Ed Sheeran concert, there'd never been quarterfinals at this stage of the year before, with COVID and everything else, kind of just changed a lot of things. But what Munster did, as soon as it became clear that Thomond Park wouldn't be ready, wouldn't be available, they looked for GAA stadiums, which is, hurling and Gaelic football that they play over here. We've got pretty big stadiums. You know, there's a stadium in Cork, which is in Munster, which is, I think, 45,000-50,000 people can go there. But that was also recovering from an Ed Sheeran concert. So we had to go looking elsewhere. And the Aviva Stadium is right there. It's up in Dublin. It's around, like, you know, if you don't know Irish geography, from most cities in Munster, from like Limerick, Cork, Waterford or whatever else, it'd be around maybe 2 or 3 hours away, drive up the main motorway into Dublin. There was cheaper tickets were made available, anywhere between 10 and 30 euro on average. There was more expensive ones that were, I think 70 was 70 euro was the most expensive ticket there, which when you consider for the Ireland games in the Six Nations, tickets can go up to 150, 200 euro in some cases. It was made pretty affordable for people because I think it's the same all over the world at the moment. Things are getting very, very expensive with fuel and everything else. So they made available a lot of buses going from Cork, Limerick, Waterford, Ennis and County Clare, a lot of other little cities and towns to get as many people as possible up there. And it was very successful. I drove up on Saturday morning from here in Limerick and there was just so many cars with Munster flags. We stopped in a few, petrol stations because there was, food and going to the toilet and stuff like that. So many Munster people, like Munster jerseys. Dublin was packed with Munster people as well. There was 40,456 people there in total, I think, which when you consider it's 2 hours away from your home stadium, getting close on nearly close to double your Thomond Park capacity. I think it's pretty impressive all told, and it was a great day.
So Tom, I mean, I feel I have to ask, what's the most important thing in for Thomond Park or Limerick? Is it Munster winning the European Cup or the Ed Sheeran concert?
Well, look, we love our Ed Sheeran concerts here, but I think looking at the money that was made from the Ed Sheeran concert will be quite useful, I think, in the next number of months. And I think looking at it, it's a shame it wasn't in Thomond, you know, but I think that the money will be useful enough. But you know, when it comes to Ed Sheeran, I'm kind of, you know, he's on the radio enough. I'm kind of sick of hearing about him.
Ah, Tom, I just think it's great watching Munster and just seeing the fans the way that they are about the team. I've been following European rugby probably for about the last 4 or 5 years or so, and they're always a team that you feel like you have to get behind just because of how the fans travel in the way that they do to even some of these away European games and that. But the one thing that we must get to, and it's unfortunately going away from Munster, but we've sort of picked up on one of your running jokes on Twitter, and it's carried on into the pod, and it's a running gag here. But can we just talk about Josh van der Vlier and his proud Johannesburg heritage here?
Oh man, that was I remember starting that a few years ago, because there's a certain subsection of Irish journalists, sports journalists, who for whatever reason have a bit of a problem when it comes to South African players, certainly when it comes to South African project players, around the time, because this was when CJ Stander was just kind of coming into the Irish reckoning, you know, when he was after qualifying on residency. And I just thought it would be funny that these guys and a lot of the journalists who were talking about it just don't really know a whole lot about rugby. So I figured, like, is it possible to make these guys think that Josh van der Vlier, who was actually born in Wicklow in Ireland, would it be possible to try and convince them just by repeating it over and over and over again that he was actually a project player? And it's actually ended up being so successful. It's ended up, I think Davies, you know, that Jiffy guy who's on BBC, repeated it once completely irony-free, had assumed he was actually a project player. And I think South African Rugby Magazine did it last week as well, which I think they were in on the joke, I think. But and the reason why it's still funny is because people are still reacting to it. It's every time I see it at this stage, I just laugh.
No, it was brilliant as well. We did a undercapped South African team last week. So guys that haven't got enough Springbok caps. And we put the question out on Twitter. And one of our first replies was, Josh van der Vlier has to be there. So we're not quite sure if everyone is quite getting it. But it's a great one to carry on, especially if it's... jumping on that bandwagon that we must get some of these journalists to actually know what they're talking about before they start bashing some of these players.
It turns out there's a Wicklow in Johannesburg. When we're getting into this, people are going, no, he was actually in Wicklow. He was actually born in Wicklow. And I was like, I know there's a Wicklow Avenue in Johannesburg. Exactly. You know, you're dead right.
That is sensational. I think we need to... maybe we need to bump this around a little bit. Like, we need to take a photo of someone's house in Wicklow and say, this is the house where he was born. And then we start spicing it a whole bunch more. Maybe we can rejuvenate it ahead of the upcoming test matches in July.
I think I ended up photoshopping him into a Stormers jersey from 2014. I think at some stage I ended up doing that, just to get people going. And I've no idea how it's lasted this long, but I just love it.
We need to find someone to volunteer as his old high school coach from deep down in Joburg, and he's transitioned from Joburg to Ireland. Just keep adding layers to this.
It must be in the interview of the coach must be in Afrikaans with subtitles.
Now with the South African sides here, it's going to be so much easier.
Yeah.
And the coach has to comment on how Josh van der Vlier has improved his ball carrying over the last season and a half.
Have you heard that too?
Oh, it's constant, man.
Yeah. Once or twice.
Tom, we know your time is precious. So I think we'll jump into quickly a bit on Johan van Kroon and sort of his impact at Munster. And has he left Munster in a better place than he found it? That's always a big rugby cliche to look at. He obviously took over from Rassie, and has he built on what Rassie started? Did he build up his own reputation at the club? And how will he be viewed? I saw there was quite a bit of nastiness when he sort of announced his departure. Will that nastiness remain, or did he do himself quite a bit of justice this weekend especially?
Yeah, I think with Johan, Johan is a great guy, a really good man. Like, you know, he's a guy I've spoken to a fair bit over here, just on pressers and stuff like that. And he's just a guy who's just consistently just being, you can tell he's just a very good man, good character. When he came in to Munster in 2017, I think it was November 2017, he was in a tough enough spot. No coach, I'd say, would like to come in and take over a team midway through a season. That's kind of what Johan had to do. And he's been, it took him a year or two to catch up, you know, to get the guys in he wanted. Brought in JP Ferrara pretty quickly, who's been another fabulous addition to Munster. He's a guy who'll be badly missed as well. And since then, I think he's been slowly building a very good squad here. You're right there. Like, when he announced he was leaving, going to Bath back in December, I think it was, there was a lot of nastiness around about him, you know, saying, oh, he should leave now and stuff like that. Genuinely, look, I think he's a guy who at times has taken a lot of flack for trying to, you know, build a system where Munster can still compete at the top end of Europe. At times, that has led to a lot of kicking. People tend not to understand kicking all that much. They want to see ball in hand, but, you know, sometimes you have to play a kick-heavy game. Johan certainly did that initially, and I think Munster were happy enough with that because Munster played an element of the Razzie Rasmus game, the kick pressure that he brought to the Springboks so successfully.
And it's difficult not to look at that when you have someone like Conor Murray in your team. Who's incredible at that. It's bread and butter kind of thing.
Oh yeah, it made a whole ton of sense. But you know, like, again, Munster didn't have the trophy success that the Springboks did. So when that happens, people start there's a kind of a groundswell of criticism starts to come in, and that's been present around Johan since then. I think he's also been quite unlucky with injury. I think, you know, you look at bringing in RG Snaiman, what a difference maker he could have been at Munster over the last two seasons, but, you know, playing less than 58 minutes across the two seasons, that's just terrible luck, you know.
And Tom, obviously, I mean, with Roundtree being promoted to be the new head coach, what's the sentiment around the fans, the Munster fans? Are they happy with the new appointment? Or, I mean, hopefully they'll see a sort of continuation of the job that Johan van Kroon has done.
Yeah, I think people are generally quite happy with Graham Rowntree. The addition of Mike Prendergast from Racing will be a big boost to people as well. Like, as in that, like, that's really added a lot of excitement. But like, I think like there is an element of continuity, you know, because again, like, to go back to the original point, like, Graham Rowntree was brought in by Johan, so. You look at how well Johan has built the squad, I think. He's taken some lumps along the way as well, because I think people wanted some of the younger players to be ready quicker than maybe they were. But as soon as a guy like Gavin Coombs, for example, was ready to roll, Johan selected him consistently. A guy like Craig Casey has featured fairly regularly for Munster in matchday squads, big games, you know, all the way over the last season or two. Guys like Ben Healy, Josh Witcherly, Alex Kendellin, when guys are ready, like they have been brought in consistently and backed consistently. So like I think the big takeaway from Johan van Kroon would be is that there was a little bit of a lot of unpleasantness, like I said, around the turn of the year. But I think he's a guy who'll be remembered, I'd say by this time next season, I think he'll be remembered quite fondly. He was at a hurling game at the weekend here, for a Limerick game. And just again, a lot of people are talking to him, coming up, shaking his hand. He's a guy, look, I think he'll be fondly remembered here in years to come.
Yeah, and I think just speaking of those young players, and I think just from a perspective of someone that doesn't obviously watch Munster every week, the performances of the youngsters against Toulouse were so impressive, especially Alex Kendellin. I think he was just, in that try that he scored, he just was relentless in just getting over the line there, especially against those sort of big Toulouse forwards. Who's your favorite young player? And then also, I think just if we need to talk a little bit about the captain. I think Omani is probably one of the best like big game players in the world right now. And he just seems to just raise his level like 10 times over when he plays a big game. We've seen it for the Irish against the All Blacks. We've seen it now for Munster over many years. But yeah, I think just start with who's your favorite youngster that's coming through for Munster now.
Well, a guy who I really like at the moment, he hasn't, you know, I wouldn't say he's a guy who people don't really know. Craig Casey, I think, is a superstar waiting to happen for Munster. I think he's an unbelievable young player. But there's some really good younger players coming through as well that people like haven't heard of and won't have heard of yet. I think Daniel Okeke is a guy who I think can have a big, big future at Munster. He's in the academy. He's a guy who I think is ready to break out next season. There's a young man called Edwin Adogbo who has real potential to be a serious player for Munster in the second row. He's currently injured, but you've got guys like John Hodnett, guys like Jack Crowley, an incredibly talented young player. Patrick Campbell at fullback, another guy really, really exciting. There's lots of good young talented players there. Scott Buckley, you know, Josh Witcherly. And I think now they're starting to come through in waves, which kind of helps to build the next wave, if that makes sense, because guys are there to be played and there to and see what is possible quite quickly.
Okay, I wanna ask pick your brain about something. Damien is obviously leaving at the end of the season, and I was having a look at Munster and trying to figure out how they're gonna fix that 12 problem, because Fekitoa is coming over, but I personally believe that he's better at 13. What do you reckon is the approach gonna be to fill that gap at 12, or how do you think it's gonna? What's the thought process behind it? Because I mean, you know, to fill Damien's shoes is pretty big, and he's actually settled in quite well and made quite a difference.
Oh yeah, look, it's very difficult to replace a guy like Damien Delende. Like, he's a genuine world class player. Like, that kind of thing gets thrown around a lot. You know, guys are, you know, everybody's world class, but I think if everybody's world class, nobody is. You look at Damien Delende, he actually is. Like, he's a guy who's produced at the highest stage. And I think that, you know, over the last two seasons, getting to watch him up close, you get a real appreciation for just how good he is, you know. And a guy, he's always kind of undervalued a little bit for what he does. But he's got a very complete game. Like, replacing him like for like is actually, it's impossible. Like, it's impossible to replace Damien Delende like for like. I think what Munster may end up doing is not replacing him with one guy, but kind of replacing him with two guys, if that makes sense. Like, you've got Malachi Fekitoa coming in, but also Antoine Friche, a guy coming in from Bristol Bears. He's a guy who plays a lot of rugby at 12. Reminds me quite a lot of Gael Ficou, actually, the French player. And I think with Mike Prendergast coming in, I could see Antoine Friche getting a lot of time at 12. And with that, Malachi Fekitoa, I could see him being used as a winger in a system at Munster over the next season, where you get all of the benefits of him offensively, but you get the creativity of Antoine Friche at 12 and the power of Chris Farrell at outside centre as well. I think in this game going forward, I think you'll see a lot of teams using essentially three midfielders. And I think you see Ireland doing that. I think a lot of teams will build towards that over the next couple of as we build into the next World Cup, I think you'll see that quite a bit.
I think you're quite spot on with Fikitoa playing on the wing. He did that quite successfully with Toulon during his time there. And yeah, I'm a massive fan of centers on the wing. I loved it when Gael Fiku played there for the French. I quite enjoy it when Jesse Creel does it for the Springboks as well. But yeah, turning our attention to the URC, Munster have their last game of the regular season against Leinster. And obviously, it's a playoff game on the home playoff match on the line for Munster, whether that's at the Viva or Derma Park. We'll have to see where Ed Sheeran is playing. But
I think he's finally gone.
Good news. Good news there for Munster, I suppose. So how do you see that game playing out? Are we going to see a full-strength Leinster side? Are we going to see a Leinster team that sort of came to South Africa? And will Munster throw all the big dogs in for that game to avoid a trip to South Africa?
Yeah, I think the last thing anybody wants for a playoff game is to have to travel to any of the South African sides. To be honest, they're very, very... That's about as difficult as it can get when you're coming to an away game. So for Munster, I think they'll have to go full strength for that game against Leinster one way or the other. But from that perspective, then you're looking at what happens next week with Leinster against Toulouse. That's the big focus, like for Leinster at the moment. So again, I think if they win that game, they will be likely looking to rotate and rest guys. But again, I think even if they lose that game, with them being guaranteed finishing top anyway, they will probably look to try and balance out their resources, I think. I think you look at, you know, Leinster have consistently been able to make sure they don't load too many minutes onto their key guys. They have a couple of guys who they can do without, if that makes sense. But there's a couple of guys who they can't, especially when it comes to big games. I'm talking about Porter, Kelleher, Furlong, and Jonathan Sexton. If they have access to those guys, they will be confident of beating anybody. But it comes down to like what their requirements are. For Munster, look, the requirements haven't really changed. Munster need to get a win in this game to guarantee a home, at least a home semi-final. And from there, you just look to try to, you know, like win that game and go as best you can. Like as he said there, like I think the South African sides in the URC this year have been just a fabulous addition. Like you look at how difficult, like you look at a possible playoff run where you have to go to South Africa to play like the Bulls or the Sharks or the Stormers even. Like, I mean, you're just like, what a nightmare trip that is. Like, it just really is just, it just shows how good the league has been this year.
Tom, talking about the South African sides, as a Munster fan, which South African side would you fear playing against, home or away? Which is the one side that will probably give you sleepless nights if you get drawn against them in the playoffs?
Like I've seen the Stormers and the Sharks in person this year, in Thomond at the start of the season. The Stormers were very impressive, even then, very, very impressive. The Bulls are huge, and playing them at altitude is always a nightmare. I thought Munster, like, actually probably should have won that game against the Bulls, though. It's a different story. Like I think at the moment, I think the Stormers have a very complete game. But you look at the Sharks as well, the quality they have. I think they've been hurt a little bit by the Springbok alignment camps, actually. It's hurt their cohesion a small bit. They have a serious pack, and it'll be even better next year. They're a side I'm looking at and going, in a big game, they have the physicality to really, really hurt you.
Tom, I agree totally with what you're saying about Leinster, Munster, and what Leinster are going to be doing. I think that they have the luxury of being able to lose that game. I know that there's so much rivalry between the two that I don't want to lose any time, but I think there might be a gap there and an opportunity for Munster to take the win just purely because Leinster will be focusing on managing squad. But the other thing is I really feel that the South African sides, now that the three big South African sides are actually all in contention for Champions Cup next year, I think they really need to finish well in the URC, because playing in Europe next year is going to be a whole other baby that we are not aware of.
certain individuals will be aware of it having played there, but teams and squads, I think that's also why the Bulls and the Sharks are just constantly like increasing their squad, because we're going to have a big squad for traveling and for Europe.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Like you look at the at European rugby, and I think, you know, from a European perspective, you kind of sometimes you take it for granted the challenges that come with it, but it's an entirely new territory for South Africa. And again, I just like a lot of people are talking about like how it'll take time for South African teams to hit the ground running. I actually don't think it will at all. I think next year, I think the South Africans, you know, so much experience of playing in European competition with the guys who are coming back as well. I think looking at the teams who've qualified, I think all three shouldn't have any fear really of playing. I'm just looking forward to those big games, the possibilities that are there. I just think that it's going to be very exciting one way or the other, because like I know there's been some complaints about the South African sides playing in Europe, but honestly, I just think it's been fabulous for the URC, and I think the Champions Cup will be just as easily as improved as the URC has been.
Yep. Thanks so much, Tom. I know you said you're on the clock a bit, so we'll have one more question for you, and I'm going to put you on the spot a bit. And luckily in the sense that Munster are out, so you can give an unbiased opinion for this one. But who are you backing to go on and win the Champions Cup? Are we going to see Toulouse win another one? Is Leinster going to break their run, or is it going to be one of the French teams?
It's very difficult to pick them. I think Leinster coming in this week against Toulouse should have an advantage. I think, you know, they're playing at home, obviously. They'll have a pretty big crowd there themselves, I think. But I think looking at like their game last weekend against Leicester, I think that they got through that fairly well. Toulouse had to, again, 100 minutes. They were going toe-to-toe with Munster. That'll take a toll as well. I keep looking at La Rochelle, though. I know Racing are doing well, but I look at La Rochelle. I look at the hurt they had last year against Toulouse, both in the top 14 and in Europe. I look at the quality of player they have available to them. Yes, they have weaknesses. But I'm looking at La Rochelle and thinking, these guys, I like you look at the quality of, like, you know, Gregory Aldrich, you have Will Skelton, their front row is so big, and powerful. Midfield is a real strength for them too. I'm looking at them and going, geez, they'll be very tough to stop if they get to a final. I could see them beating Racing, actually. But that Toulouse-Leinster game, it's tough to look at that and go that whoever wins that is it, like that's the final before the final, if that makes sense. I look at them and go, like, whoever wins that game, I think will be very close. Like, will be like that they'd be the favourites, I think, to win. It's just very difficult to call. I think looking at Leinster, I think it's hard to look past them. You know, you look at the quality they have, the number of Irish internationals they have. Again, I think injury-wise, if they can keep that core of four guys fit, Porter, Kelleher, Furlong, and Sexton, if they can keep those four guys fit and firing, I'd find it very difficult to look past them. Again, I just think it's really set up to be a fantastic semi-final series. All four teams who are there, you can't say that none of those four don't have a chance of winning. It's all set up to be a great tournament. I'm just looking at Toulouse as well. I don't know. I'm thinking La Rochelle. I'm looking at La Rochelle and thinking they have it in them to get the win.
I like that you keep coming back to La Rochelle, considering the Munster connection with the head coach.
Oh yeah, no, so, like Roger killed me if I went against them.
Oh, no, that's fair enough. Tom, thank you for your time today. It was great to have you on, and I'm sure our listeners will love the insight into Munster. They're seriously one of my favorites overseas teams, and it's not just because I think you call him War God Peter Omani, but yeah, it was great to have you on, and we'll love to catch up soon. And yeah, for any of the listeners, please head over to I think it's all, on all podcast platforms, the provincial. So you're going to have to correct me. It's the Provincial State of Mind. Is that correct?
That's the one.
Yeah, that's it. And he's at Three Kings on Instagram and Twitter. I don't think you deal with Facebook, do you?
at Three Red Kings on Twitter and Instagram, I think.
Yeah, and Tom also has a Patreon account that I can assure you is well worth it, whether you're a Munster fan or not.
Thanks very much for having me on, lads.
Thanks,
cheers,
Tom.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, Tom.
Yes, so that was Tom Savage of At Three Red Kings and his just brilliant insight into Munster and what's going on there. But yeah, there's actually four European semifinals to look forward to this weekend. So we can just do a quick preview of those four games. I think let's start with the Leinster versus Toulouse game. It's tough to look past Leinster after how easily they dismantled Leicester over the weekend and just made the top team in England look pretty ordinary. But I'll start with you, Sean. What is there any way for Toulouse to come back and to play? Or are we just relying on some Dupont-Tamak magic to get them through this weekend?
Yeah, I must be honest. Toulouse haven't been playing well for a while. They're not playing like they were playing last season. They're just seem to be getting through games, and there's a bit of magic here and there. So, you know, it can go one of two ways. Like, they could just be continuing to play the way they're playing, and in which case Leinster are most certainly gonna beat them and beat them comfortably, because Leinster will grind it out. They're all for it. They love knockouts, and they're pretty in tune with their game plan and what they want. But the other option is that Toulouse actually do hit their straps, and then we will be in for a proper game, and that'll be super fun, because I think what will happen is Leinster will find themselves chasing the game, and then they will kick into gear, and then it'll become an absolute slugfest. So I must be honest, Leinster at home against the Toulouse that we've been watching lately, I say Leinster are going to take it.
Jared, and then do you think there's a tactic actually for playing against both Toulouse and France, and that is to make their big forwards run around the whole time? You know, maybe France doesn't necessarily have someone as big as the Toulouse lock, the young Australian, Emmanuel Miafu. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but it seems like what Munster tried to do was kick deep, try to make them sort of run up and down the whole time, and then just back themselves that they'll outlast Toulouse, and it almost worked.
Yeah, it did almost work, and they certainly did tire out the pack. Like, some of those the Toulouse pack in general came off at halftime, the first halftime, should I say, and they looked like shattered. So I think Leinster will take a lot away from that Munster-Toulouse game, and yeah, they will look to target the same areas. I think the scrum battle is going to be a massive one. I think Toulouse can put Leinster under pressure there, despite Leinster's all Irish pack pretty much. But I think Munster provided Leinster with a bit of a blueprint on how to subdue Toulouse as much as possible. But the thing is once you've got Dupont and Intermac in that back line, it's just hard to contain them for that long.
Yeah, it seemed like Munster also was putting a lot of pressure on Dupont. And I mean, it worked for most of the game, but there were still important moments where he could just wiggle free of that pressure. So let's just do predictions then quickly. Cooks, let's start with you. Toulouse or Leinster?
I think Leinster's going to have too many. Leinster's got too many guys are playing good rugby in form. So I think that's going to be Leinster at home. I think Leinster by 10.
Oof, okay. So that's quite strong. Sean?
I'm going to say Leinster as well.
Jared, Leinster full house?
No, I'm going to go with Toulouse. I'm not backing Leinster on this one. I think Toulouse have had two tough games in a row, and that they haven't had a great season. So I think those two tough games and getting wins in both of them will inspire them to go and knock over Leinster.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think Toulouse's luck runs out against the Irish teams. They snuck one through against Ulster. They snuck again through against Munster. And playing 100 minutes and you have another big match on the Saturday, that's not great. So I'm going for Leinster to win. And yeah, and also just going for Josh van der Vleer to have man of the match. It'll be a big game for the South African. Then, Cox, let's move on to the Racing versus La Rochelle semi-final. Cox, I mean, I know you're very neutral when it comes to Racing, but I know that was a match that you were focusing on Sunday. What do you think was the difference in their performance from the first half to the second half?
I mean, I know Racing has got a above average fly half, you know. I mean, apparently the guy's a magician. Apparently he cooks. Big, you know, I'm not much of a fan of him, as you guys know, and all our viewers know.
But yeah, Anton Grimbert is quite close to the French team now. Hey? He's playing some good rugby. So I don't think we should be calling him average. Come on, man.
No, I think the big difference is, I think with the Russell 92 is
players like
Teddy Thomas and Finn Russell, and you got these guys are box office. I mean, the try that Teddy Thomas scored was freakish, and then after that the try Finn Russell scores. I mean, when you aside playing against that, I mean, not only is Russell 92 a very good side as well, now you still got players like that sort of break the game open. I mean, that was the Teddy Thomas was just before half-time, and Finn does that just after half-time, and you sort of find yourself in a situation where if you sail, you've conceded two tries and two freakish tries, and then now the Racing is flowing. And then I think that's the big thing with the Racing is you sort of you have to get them in a situation where you kind of make it tighter and you sort of take away the big magic play. But yeah, listen, I thought Finn was very good again. It was very good. And Sean likes to say, as to quote Sean, is, Teddy Thomas is probably one of the most balanced rugby players you'll find. I mean, that try you scored was freakish on the weekend. It was freakish.
Breach, brother. He's incredible just when he runs. It's insane.
Speaking of freakish tries, that one from London Irish's fullback was simply insane. 100 meters. Like, my God.
Henry Arundel.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's on our Twitter page. It's worth watching at least 100 times for each meter that apparently, he ran.
apparently, he's still running. Like, he's still running.
I wouldn't be surprised. Hey?
Jesus, that was ridiculous.
You must watch that. You must watch. Just watch how he runs and how he puts that one defender on his backside just from a little hip swerve. And then that little step he does to wrong foot, I can't remember who it was.
Siren.
To wrong foot the last defender and then go and finish in the corner is ridiculous. That is elite skills. That is not something that was just pure pace. There was pace, and he actually manufactured a way of getting rid of his defenders with some skills, and he did that while running full tilt. I'd pull a hamstring and do a knee trying to do that sort of stuff.
It's the best solo try I've seen since Christian Cullen's one. I can't think of a better one. And I put it out on Twitter, and I got John Kerwin's one against Italy in 87 or something ridiculous like that. I can't think of a better one.
Yeah, I think that was amazing. And if I'm not mistaken, Arundel qualifies for both England, or for all three of England, England, Ireland, and Wales. So I think there will be a race and for his services in the next. And Scotland. Oh, yes. Goodness. There will be a race for his services in the next few months, I'm sure. But let's just do some predictions quickly. Cooks, let's start. I think we can just skip you. You're picking Racing against La Rochelle, right?
Yeah, Racing. And then if they get to the final, I'm picking Racing as well. Just. Just letting you guys know.
Auto pick. Okay. That's crazy. Sean, where are you going for Racing versus La Rochelle?
Yeah, I'm going Racing.
Jared?
Yeah, I'll go against the grain again and I'll say La Rochelle.
No, this time, Jared, you have some support. I'm going La Rochelle as well. I think they're an amazing team. I think the way that they started that quarterfinal, yes, was a weakened Montpellier that they were playing. But I think Dylan Lates looks like he wants to cook. Raymond Rule was looking great there.
And Victor Vito.
And Victor Vito.
Victor Vito.
Just look and also watch for Antonio. He put that Montpellier, he almost snapped that Montpellier's back, the Lucid's back in half in one of the scrums. It was a bit scary, actually.
Yeah, he faulted
it. Do you know that Adam Hastings does not play for La Rochelle? I see you trying to bring this agenda back here against Finn. I see what you're trying to do. Standing in the Adam Hastings this weekend. It's not Adam Hastings.
No.
Listen, Adam Hastings got served against Saracens.
By the English master, Owen Farrell. But that actually brings us into our next set of semifinals. The big one is Saracens versus Toulon, which is usually a European Champions Cup final. But I think the Etzebeth versus Itoje Pot 263 match will be a good one as always. Who are we going for that? I'm going to obviously go Saracens.
Saracens.
I'm going Saracens.
We've got a full house here. We've got a full house here. I don't think Toulon have the quality to knock over Saracens just yet. Like it's in Toulon, but yeah, I can't see it happening.
And then the final match is Lyon versus Wasps. Cooks, who are you going for?
I'm going to go English final, Wasps.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the Wasps beat Edinburgh 34-30. Lyon pulled the win over Glasgow, so they beat the two Scottish sides. Sean?
I'm also going to go for Wasps, but it's going to be tough, and it's a hard call that. I just really want Wasps to take it.
Jared?
I'll go against the grain again. I'm going to say Lyon, and just purely because it's in Lyon. I think it's incredibly tough.
You can't go
tight.
Against Jimmy Gopper 3.
Yeah, but I also Lima Sopawanga hits a goal line. He hit a drop goal from a goal line dropout. And so Jimmy does that. So I'm sticking with Leon.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the team with Demba Bamba and Davin Nineashvili. So I'm gonna also go Leon. So Jared has another friend again.
Thanks, Nala.
And then always got your back. Very quickly, any rugby shout outs for the weekend? My quick shout out is to the two acrobatic finishers from Mark Talea and Lester Fanganuku. They were, those are just two of the best finishers you'll see from a wing there.
My shout out has to go to Paul Ruiz for stealing that game against Paul Jim on the weekend after throwing it away and just stealing it. So it was an unbelievable finish on the weekend.
I think that might be I think load shedding has caught up to us. Or Jared, are you still there?
Yeah, I think Jared.
Jared's not there, but you're there. Sean, quickly, your shout out, and then we can go.
So mine's a little bit of a sad one, but Kelly Miafua, who plays in the Pro 2 for Montauban, was unfortunately died yesterday, I think it was. They were celebrating their win, and they were at a walking over a bridge or something, and he jumped off the bridge, and it was like 15 or 20 meters, and things got a little bit bad, and he drowned. So yeah, that's a bit of a rugby shout out and a memory for him. He played for Samoa, he played for the Waratahs, and he's been so it's quite a shock, a little bit of a crazy one.
Oh, that is terrible. That's really horrible news to hear. But yeah, rest in peace and all the best wishes to his family as well. But hopefully, we can just see sort of Montauban. I think they're also in the competition for playoff spots for the top 14. So hopefully they can just play well in his memory. But they're in the competition, right? They're sort of around the playoff spots.
And their win was vital this weekend. Their win was important because there's one more round happening on Thursday before they go into the knockouts. But their win this weekend essentially allowed them to stay in the running. So it was huge.
That's great. So yes, thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to another edition of the Rugby Bits podcast. A little bit shorter this time. You can thank ESCOM for that. But a good episode. Thank you so much to Tom again for joining us. And you can check out his content on the Three Red Kings Twitter page and also on the Provincial State of Mind podcast. Thanks so much, team, for joining today. And please visit the Rugby Bits website for content, our Rugby Bits Twitter page. We have a few, I think the polls just finished on our Springbok players that we felt like should have got more Springbok caps, 15s. I think Jared, I'll say, snuck a win by 30% over us. And then just check out all of our content there. And then also check out the bet.co.za website for any of the markets for the rugby games this week. Thank you so much for listening, and we will chat to you again. Bye-bye.